What is up? It is Tuesday night, and it is time for another episode of Inside the Game. And just to start off on a lighthearted note, Mini Wheat is literally next to me on the chair dancing to the theme song to Inside the Game. He's really excited. Just that, wow, he's still going at it, guys. What is up? As you can see, we are missing one of our co-hosts here. Pain User and Idra, of course, they showed up in control. Had a match that he had to play. So I believe he's going to be joining us when that match is over. That won't stop us from getting started, guys. What's up? How's your week been?
Pretty good, man. Been super busy with IPL stuff and casting. But other than that, it's been great. I had a good Memorial Day. Hung out with the family. Had some barbecue action.
Nice, yeah. I grilled some steaks myself. It was very, very nice. Love it. Love it. Idra, how about you? Did you take some time off for Memorial Day, or were you...
I've been really, really busy, actually. I had the Complexity Tournament all weekend. I've casted a couple of Masters Cup matches in preparation for MLG and stuff, so I had a lot going on.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's nice to have a break on there. And, of course, one of the things we're going to be talking tonight about is getting ready for MLG, which is going to be this weekend. And I know a lot of people excited for that. I'm excited for that. I heard, like, there are going to be 80 games broadcasted, like, just a ridiculous or stupid, sick amount. I could be totally wrong with that number. Maybe it's 50. I don't know. Either way, it's going to be an ass ton of StarCraft II. And while as a caster and as a spectator, it's totally awesome to be on the watching side. You know, you guys have a different perspective as you are getting ready for it. But before we jump into that, Pena, you've now been at IGN for a while doing the IPL stuff. You are kind of one of the few people that is sort of like, you know, working towards esports or pro gaming and from a player and sort of a stream or personality perspective. How's it been going, dude? No fluff.
It's awesome, man. Yeah? It's my full-time job now. It's what I do. And there's a bunch of other like-minded individuals over here doing the exact same thing, which is kind of awesome, too. So I'm working with people that are stoked about esports, that love StarCraft 2, and we talk about it all the time. And, yeah, I'm actually going to be going to MLG representing IGN as well, and I'm going to be doing some in-depth player interviews and trying to get some really good content from the players for IPL. So
does that mean you're not playing?
It does.
How do you feel about
Sadly,
that as a player?
I'm cool with it. Like, I feel like I'm ready to, well, I already have, but make that transition from, you know, playing full-time to working full-time, because you can't balance them both. And I am working, you know, 40-hour work weeks plus loads of overtime, and there's no way to balance that with being a pro player. Like, I tried for a while with NASL, and then NASL being unwilling to reschedule any of my matches, like, you know, I was forced to forfeit several games, and it's just, there's no way to manage that many tournaments and leagues and stuff and do the whole, like, caster esports personality thing at the same time. So
I mean, I agree with you. That's how I started it, you know, getting into broadcasting in the first place too. But I don't know that you answered my question. Like, how does it make you feel as a player, dude? Because I know you and I have had those conversations. You love Quake. You love Warsaw. Yep. You know, you love... So you have that competitive, like, I want to kill people and drink their blood edge. How do you feel about it as a player, dude?
I totally agree with you, but I had it a lot more when I was, like, 19, 20. Like,
so 20, you're
24 now. I got a lot of responsibilities and
all grown up.
Being a player wasn't cutting the cheese. I mean, there are certain players, like, you know, I'm sure Greg, like, you know, I don't have any precise numbers, but, you know, I'm sure Greg, I'm sure In Control, I'm sure that maybe Select, maybe one or two other players are making, like, a somewhat, you know, decent living off of esports, but I'm making a good living off of esports.
So you think right now, I mean, obviously you've said right there in your statement that you know you're going to be able to be more successful as, you know, I don't say behind the scenes because it's an integral part, but on the broadcasting or coverage side.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Like, I'm comfortable on camera. I feel like I speak relatively well. I know a lot of the players. I'm friends with a lot of the players. I've competed with a lot of the players. I think that opens me up to the possibility of doing interviews where it's not to just, like, you know, in my face, in your face. What do you think about it? You know, I can actually, like, sit down with the guys and get some really good content. And then also, you know, I'm going to be analyzing and studying them for all the IPL seasons. So, yeah, I think I'm totally ready for it. I'm in a good position to do it, and
so I'm enjoying it. I mean, is this considered like an official announcement then? I honestly, this is not in our script, but I just wanted to know, and it kind of went that way. So
I'm still going to play SC2, and like I'm still going to compete when I have time. But right now, like, I'm so busy, and we're working on so many things that I literally like don't even have time to play. Like, I go home and I go to sleep, and then I wake up and I work. So it's like, when I find time to play at home, yeah, sure. Like, I put in time when and where I can, but as far as like competing in anything major,
so
not.
Okay, not, I mean, yeah, future. Sure. I mean, you obviously are still going to MLG, be there for its, you know, another.
Yeah, I'm
going to
be at all the major tournaments, but, like, you know, covering the meta game, what players are up to, because like, as an analyst caster or a caster in an analyst role, you know, that's how I'm going to stay sharp. I'm obviously not out there competing anymore, but I'm going to be out there talking with the guys, watching all their games, you know, seeing what new strategies are being employed and
sure.
figuring out what's going on from that perspective. So that's
right on.
That's
right on.
Key match.
Okay. So let's just rewind a little bit here. What was then your like last tournament loss, you think, in the NASL?
My fifth loss in the NASL.
Do you know who that was against? Do you remember?
Or my fourth loss in the NASL to Drewby. But I mean,
it was Drewby.
Those are like, I hadn't been practicing for a while.
I'm just curious. Does Drewby now get to say that he, you know, beat you into retirement?
You would.
Oh, I'm just playing, dude. I think
you
it's
would
awesome.
Sucker me into that.
I think it's awesome. All right. So anyway, guys, welcome to Inside the Game here. As I mentioned, In Control is going to be joining us. You guys see the Heart of the Swarm stuff?
Yep.
Are you like, oh my God, I'm so excited? Well, now Painyuz is going to have all the time in the world, dude. So he's totally stoked for the campaign. No, I'm just kidding. Did you guys even play the Wings of Liberty campaign? Like,
come on,
seriously?
Dude. Of course. I was one of the only competitive players. Like, day one, I went through the whole thing. All my friends are just like immediately grinding out ladder games. I played through the whole thing, dude. That's how I roll. I was at least gonna give the game that much respect.
You said no. You've not even given it one thought, Idra. You not even said ever like
nope.
I haven't played any of it at all. No.
Man, maybe you don't realize the story that you're missing out on, man.
For me, it's all about the cutscenes and the story.
I don't actually like games. I just like beating people. And the computer doesn't really fill in for that very well.
It's not.
I am a machine.
If the campaign was controlled by a human, would you play then?
Sure. Anything to beat people.
Because then it could be like, yeah, I kicked his ass.
Yeah,
that would kind of be fun, actually. So they had the big single player event, and I know that not that many people. Well, I mean, people are excited about it because it's the next version, but I think everyone's really excited for, you know, the multiplayer stuff. They did say new units. It got out there, let's hope we see some more awesomeness. I look forward to that. Anyway, guys, we'll go on to our first segment. You're doing it wrong. Don't forget, we have been getting some great emails. You can send them to itg@onemoregame.tv. And so many emails that I'm going to have to find a few people to help me go through them. So if you're interested, throw me a tweet and let's talk. We'll try to do that because there is a lot of stuff coming in. And this week, in Painyuz, or even though you're not necessarily playing, we'll get a lot of perspective here from Idra. But I want to talk a little bit about preparing for a tournament. And as it can relate...
Oh, I still know how to do that.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I feel like we went through, back playing Quake and TDM back in the day. We had very distinct training that we went into prior to an event. But, I think that this is important to talk about because not everyone's going to necessarily be at an MLG competing, but I guarantee you that someone will go to a local LAN. There'll be like 8 StarCraft 2 players there that are really decent, and then like 10 like just okay guys that they'll all beat on. And he'll get to that final match, and because maybe he's never experienced it or hadn't practiced for it, would lose. So I think that this could benefit any level of player, regardless of whether this is a MLG match or whether this is, big Landfest Explosion Extreme 2011 happening at the local Landmart. So let's go ahead and throw it over to Idra first. Idra, you know, and I've got a couple specific questions about it. Because let's talk about it from an MLG standpoint, where you are going into a tournament with a specific pool set, and then you're going to have to go in and face everyone from the ladder. So my first question is are there two specific things that you have to do to train and consider for? And then B, you know, what are those things if that's true?
Well, I've actually taken a different approach to practice for the time being. Like about a month and a half, 2 months ago, I had lost out of GSL and I wasn't really practicing that much. But then I had IEM, DreamHack, and MLG coming up, and I was really motivated for that. I practiced a ton. I looked at every player who I thought I would have to worry about in the tournament, and I practiced a bunch specifically for them with my teammates, figuring out a bunch of strategies and all of that. And I was pretty disappointed with my results. I was just really frustrated with the state of Zerg in particular, and I just kind of stopped practicing seriously after that. I just play on ladder, play casual games, and it's been working a lot better for me because I still have the really good mechanics. I still feel like I can outplay anyone outside of Korea, but now I'm a lot more relaxed about my approach to the game, and I'm actually willing to just like cheese Protosses and take the free wins from that. So it's actually improved my game a lot to kind of calm down and relax about all of it and not take it as seriously. So that's kind of a weird question for me. But yes, generally speaking, what I would do is I would go in, I would look at any opponents who I thought I needed to worry about specifically, like it was Kiwikake and Sake at the last MLG, and I would look at any games I could find of them, any replays, any VODs like that, try and pick out any tendencies, and then I would get Axelav and In Control, my teammates, and I would practice a bunch with them, ask them to mimic styles, and try and figure out what would work well versus it, and what I was comfortable with doing, and just focus a lot of time into all that. And then I would also go and play a bunch of games on the ladder so I could get experience playing against random opponents and just kind of get a feel for what is generally happening at the time, what a lot of people are kind of just general trends in the metagame.
Right, right. Now, well, let me ask you then a specific question about the pool plays, because certainly, and although I think that that's great that you found this more casual approach to your practice, you know, beneficial, but do you, I mean, you go in against three Terrans and another Zerg in your pool plays, meaning that, you know, your initial matches, you're not going to meet a single Protoss. Do you put any
Tyler
extra,
group.
What?
I have Tyler.
Oh, group. I'm looking at the wrong one. Yes, my bad. Let me look then. So it's totally right. Yes, I guess you've got all three. But do you give any more weight to Terran because you're going to be facing?
No, honestly, all my practice recently has just been on ladder. I do the streaming from North America, which is mostly just for fun and for streaming, and then I have a practice account on Europe where I play a bit more seriously. But that's pretty much the extent of my practice, unless one of my teammates asks me for games to help themselves.
All right. Well, Pain User, let's hear from you. What do you think? Preparing for a tournament, what can you tell the audience to help them out?
Well, I mean, I just covered a lot of it. You need to study the opponents that you're worried can actually beat you. So I know how every time a player gets interviewed and people are like, who's your most threatening opponent? Everybody's like, I'm not threatened by anybody. Well, that's a load of crap. Everybody knows who can beat them. Everybody knows who the people who could actually give them a run for their money are. So study those players, figure out what they're up to, get as many replays of them as you can, find out what they've been doing lately. More so, try and find out the sneaky stuff that they've been up to. Like, especially Greg. Like, players like Select and other players always have all kinds of real dirt nasty stuff ready for him that hasn't been seen before, like triple bunker blocks and just like all kinds
of four
of
them.
Or four of them, yeah. So things like that, I think that really gives you a leg up if you know that that stuff even exists and you can prepare for it. And then also to touch on what you were saying, like to bring it back a little bit for players, you know, maybe like your first LAN or like your first major event, just take it easy. Learn how to deal with the stress. Don't get all caught up in the whole thing. You got to take it one game at a time and just focus on each match going into it, and prepare for that opponent. And just do as much prep work as you can beforehand, but even while you're there at the tournament, you can do prep work in between games. Things like getting a lot of sleep, eating good food, not going out and partying too much. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do at tournaments to just boost your chances of winning just by a little bit, and you learn that over time. I'm not necessarily the best at following those, but I still know what they are.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because to tell the real truth behind all these events, you know, it's almost like a giant family reunion a lot of times. It's like, hey, what's up? You know, we're going out with this team and this team. It generally doesn't have this, like, oh my God, I'm going to just cut your throat and drink your blood and eat your intestines after I destroy you type feeling to it. You know, until you actually get into the game. So there is a lot of needing to focus, when that time comes. And unfortunately, there's a lot of waiting involved. You know, you've all been there before. It's like, okay, Greg, you've got, 5.5 hours till your next match. So whatever. How do you guys deal with, like, those types of things?
For me, I've just kind of gotten used to it. I used to have terrible nerve problems, especially in StarCraft 1. But really, it's just a matter of experience, and I don't know any shortcuts for getting over that, but I'm able to block stuff out pretty well. But the stuff he mentioned, eating well and making sure you get enough sleep, all that's really, really important. Stuff like that can throw you off your game a lot more than people really realize. So if you can just focus on little things like that, it kind of takes your mind away from the upcoming match, and it also serves, you know, a beneficial purpose in itself. But no, unfortunately, I don't really have any tips for getting over nerves and keeping your focus and stuff, just because I was terrible at it until I somehow stumbled on to being okay with it.
So, I mean, kind of even going back to, like, the Korean days, you know, do you think that some of the practice that you were exposed to over there, that's had an effect, and maybe that's why you're changing it up a little bit, because you are in a more casual environment than you were over in Korea?
Maybe, kind of. But I was already living on my own in Korea for quite a while before, and taking it just as seriously. So I don't think so much. Although the background from Korea, that is what gave me mechanics, and that's what's allowing me to kind of slack off a little bit right now, just because I still have that basis to work from. And really, you do need to practice a lot.
Do you think you can over-prepare, Idra?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yeah, I think the Koreans actually do. When you practice 12 hours a day, that's way too much. You get burned out. You get stuck in a rut. Yeah.
Of course, on the same token, you know, some of the Koreans are considered some of the best, so it can't totally be a bad thing.
They are closer to the proper amount than foreigners were, especially for StarCraft 1. StarCraft 2, I think it's much more even. I think foreigners are taking it a lot more seriously. But no, it was better to practice too much than too little, and foreigners did practice too little, but 12 hours is too much. I would say 8 to 10 hours a day is plenty.
Do you guys know of anyone who's actually
I think you can apply that to, like, anything in life, you know? Like, too much of anything is generally bad. You got to find a balance.
Well, how come we have totally to work 40 hours a week, pain user? How come we have to work 40 hours a week, then? Sometimes 60.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I'm burnt out of that shit. So, anyway. You know, so over preparing, obviously it can be a problem. Have you ever not prepared that much for a tournament and had, like, decent results?
Yeah, certainly. Actually, a lot of online tournaments, like for IPL, I didn't practice for any of the matches, and I actually ended up winning it. And that was right after the period where I prepared a ton for MLG and stuff and got 7th or whatever. So, yeah, like I said, not practicing has just been working out pretty well for me.
See, that's really weird, because I'm, like, the polar opposite of that. If there's one thing I found about StarCraft 2, it's, like, you get out of it exactly what you put into it. If you practice really hard for a tournament, or at least when I practice really, really hard for a tournament, put a lot of heart and soul and effort into it, I usually do really well. And when I don't, I don't. So that's how it works out for me. But Edra's put in enough, you know, time, I feel like, over the years that, like, you know, he's at a point in his game where, like, you know, a few months of hard practice isn't really going to tip the scales too much, I think.
Yeah, you start to get diminishing returns on improvements in your mechanics, and that's what the hours and hours and hours of practice really help. As long as you are still, like, following the game, watching your opponents, and thinking about it on a strategic level, then you can afford to slack off on practice if you already have really high-level mechanics, I think.
Well, since we're talking about MLG, I think I'd probably be killed if I didn't at least ask you guys, you know, who do you see performing really well at this tournament? I know Idra is a player. It's a little bit more difficult of a question, but Pain User, since you're kind of going from a coverage perspective, any thoughts on that?
On what specifically?
On who you think's going to do well in the competition.
Well, I think Idra is going to do very well. I think Select is going to do very well. I think some of the European players are going to do very well. I think Thorzane is definitely a contender. He's shown himself to be very, very good as of late. Those are definitely my favorites right there. I hope Kiwikaki does really well, but he always seems to struggle at the really big venues and the big tournaments, but I feel like he's due for something. And
all right.
But I think Thorzane and Idra are going to do very well, and I think Naniwa will also do very well.
All right. Well, before we move on from this topic of preparing for a tournament, I've got someone here who wants to actually Mini Wheat. Pain User's not going to MLG as a player.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's only going to be doing coverage. Does that disappoint you? No, it doesn't disappoint you?
It doesn't disappoint me.
Okay. Well, what do you want to say to these guys before? Well, I guess, what do you want to say to Idra and EG In Control, who's represented by the crazy girl Eatin' Noodles, about MLG and playing StarCraft II?
Well, I forgot.
You forgot what you were going to tell them. Were you going to tell them to do well?
Forgot still.
Okay, he's forgotten. All right, Mini Wheat. Way to go. You know, one night you're like, "Oh, your hatchery got owned, Daddy," and then the next night you're nothing. You're nothing. You got nothing. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mini Wheat, for playing. There you go. All right, well, Mini Wheat had this huge speech about how he wanted you to make big armies and win, and then he apparently failed. You know what? You may have trolled me yesterday, but that was Mini Wheat fail right there, buddy. Yeah. Hey. All right. Okay. High five. Down low. Down low. Down low. Down low. Too slow, sucker. Oh, you suck. Okay. Sorry, guys. So preparing for a tournament, you know, one of the other things that I just did want to mention, sorry about the distraction, back in the Quake days, even still in some of the FPS days, we do a lot of boot camping. Obviously, just playing against, one other team, asking a team to basically deploy a specific strategy so we could like play it over and over, or try to break certain strategies, certain like rooms, et cetera, et cetera. Have you
to get
guys
used to ping to hardware setups, settings, desk height?
Exactly. Exactly. So do you guys ever, or have you ever like done any practicing or preparation in that way, shape or form, like in a boot camp environment?
I know Greg has. So
I mean, I guess Korean is boot camp environment all the time.
He's done that here too, I think.
Well, I'm like living with a bunch of my teammates, so yeah.
But you mentioned that mostly you were doing laddering. So do you ever go
right now? No, but before the last MLG and stuff like that, we were playing pretty intensely.
And do you ever like say, okay, I want you to just do this strat against me, or practice in that scenario a lot?
Yeah, certainly. It's really beneficial just because you have to be used to whatever you're going to face in the tournament. If you actually get caught off guard in the middle of an important match, that's a situation you never want to happen. It's really hard to react to something like that on your feet, even for anyone, even people considered creative players. Most of the time they look creative because they have experienced so much and they know what to do in any given situation. It's pretty rare to come up with something good on your feet in an entirely new situation in an important match.
All right. So, guys, preparing for a tournament or a big match, sounds like take care of yourself. Practice, whether that means hardcore practice or casual practice. And, I guess just play a lot. Boot camp, whatever. But that's your Doing It Wrong. You can send your emails over to itg@onemoregame.tv. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and go into the mailbag. If BattleNet had email, we all know it never will. So this is why we answer your questions here. No Crow asked the following to Idra. Idra, why don't – wait, actually he said, why doesn't we see more unit variety in the Z endgame? So, you know, maybe not the best English, but that's okay. No Crow, why don't we see more unit variety in the Zerg endgame?
Well – Ultralisks are just incredibly bad. I mean, everything destroys them, and it's pretty easy to get out the response to them quickly. Like, you already have robotics up, you chrono out a couple of immortals. Even just warping in around to the Zealots, they tank so well against them. And then for Terran, obviously, pretty much every Terran unit is good against Ultras. I mean, they're just not a good unit. They're too big and clunky and slow and not cost-worthy. And,
they're terrible.
Basically, you're basically just stuck going Broodlords, and Broodlords are pretty useless unless you have Infestor support to try and nullify Blink and Vikings, so you're almost always stuck with Broodlord Infestor just because the other options are bad.
Did you want any comments on the Ultras, Payne?
I totally agree. Like, well, first of all, you never really see them anymore. I mean, there was like a little fad period where people were using like super heavy queen style into Massling Ultra, but they're super big and clunky.
It's been a long time since I think I've seen an Ultra in a match.
Well, Broodlords are just better in virtually every way. And that's really all there is to it. Like, if Broodlords weren't as good, I guess you would see Ultras more, but I don't think that really solves the issue. They're just, something is wrong with them at the core. I think they need to be like smaller and a little bit faster, possibly do a little bit more damage. I don't know how you'd rework them, but as a standalone unit, they're just not very useful. They don't really serve very many purposes other than absorbing a decent damage,
a shitload of minerals and gas or something.
Money.
Idra, would you agree smaller, maybe a little bit faster?
Yeah, they're like, pretty bad in almost every aspect. I mean, the only real use we have for them is breaking force fields and cleaning up if you already have a massive economic advantage. They are a little bit more mobile than Broodlords, so if I have like a ridiculous economic lead versus a Terran, then sometimes I'll go Ultraling Infestor, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, it won't be a problem once the queens go massive and they can break the force field, so we'll be all good then.
That would be perfect. Yeah.
And you know, I was gonna add my own question to the user question. Is that what? And it was, do you think it's a problem that there is less variety? You know, and I put a little note like the swarm mentality. I mean, a lot of Zerg games are obviously won with just one or two different type of units, and a lot of them. It's not always true. I'm not totally trying to generalize, but do you think that that's a problem, or do you think that's kind of the race?
I don't have a problem with it from a stylistic standpoint, but from a balance standpoint, I think it's definitely a problem. If the other races don't have to respect one of your two hive tech options, then it's much easier for them to prepare. Like, if you see a hive, you know it's going to be Broodlords. You don't have to worry about Ultras, even if you don't know what Inspire is, or you have no information.
Yeah, once you find either the hive tech, or if you catch the Spire morphing, generally you already know where the Spire is before you catch the hive, and then you can just, you know, keep scanning to get the timing on the greater Spire. And if you can preemptively get Vikings out, like, you're generally in a pretty good situation.
And I just got, thank you for those comments. I just got note that Jeff is here. So I think we're going to go ahead and try to bring him on. So let me go ahead and add him to that, and then we'll get started. I'll give you guys the next question while I get this going. Let's see. Okay, this will be a good one that you guys can talk about while we go on. And that is that Matt, who is a Gold League Protoss, says, how do I properly execute the stutter step micro? I see Marines use it all the time, and also Stalkers. How exactly is it done? Now, he could go to Google and just type it in and watch the YouTube video, but he wants to hear it from you guys. You guys want to comment on that, and I'll bring Jeff on?
Pretty sure you just move back and then attack move forwards and keep repeating that. I don't think there's anything special to it, is there?
Or just hit S or hold position. Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. I guess Zerg doesn't really have to do that very much.
Oh, you can kind of do it with Roaches and Hydras.
Roaches, but a little bit, yeah.
I mean, which one is... Hello, sir. What is up?
Yeah, I just said hold position on, like, repeatedly.
The only trick to it is knowing the cooldown time so you hit it at the right time. Like, that's all you have to do is just give it some command that will make them attack as soon as they are capable of attacking again.
Yeah, you're just trying to maximize the distance you can run away from the opposing unit between cooldowns of your shots.
Welcome, Jeff.
What's up, guys?
What's up, dude? How you doing?
Don't worry about it.
Good.
To the show. We were just talking about the stutter step micro of the Marines and Stalkers. Idra mentioned attack move. Taylor said hold position. How do you do it?
I attack. Attack move, attack. Attack move, attack.
Is there a benefit to either one?
Seeing as how we already have all of this juicy, juicy information, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So many people keep asking me, Jeff, what happened with the state of the game? I don't even know, and I'm curious.
Well, today will be the last day that I'll be a official host of State of the Game because I need to kind of prioritize a lot of my time and energy and make sure that I'm giving it all as a player. And then the shows that I do have to be much more focused towards that. So, you know, like if I'm doing a show or if I'm spending time doing content, it needs to be directly benefiting, like my immediate team and who I'm working with and stuff like that. So some of the extracurricular stuff that I'm doing is going to have to go by the wayside for a while just because I have to hyper-focus everything I'm doing.
I hear you.
Just like, just pretty much like what you said.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Taylor talked about tonight how he is not going to MLG as a player. He is going as a coverage partner, and talked about that a little bit. Was that news to you, Jeff? Did you know that?
Taylor's been talking about becoming more of a commentator and stepping back as a player. I did not know about MLG, though.
Yep. Drewby beat him into retirement, I heard.
Oh, it's terrible. That bit go out.
I know, right?
I'm just kidding. Okay. All right, Word. We got a question from Ross for In Control and Pain User. So, Idri, you can sit this one out for a second or just chime in if you want. I had a PVT question for both In Control and Pain User. I was wondering what Jeff thinks is the best way to deal with EMPs. Conversely, what is Taylor afraid of against his ghosts? I guess, like, what does he worry about when he's got his ghost out on his fields? Seems that a lot of recent games are being lost due to EMP essentially reducing a Protoss army by half or a third of their health, rendering their army a great deal less resilient. EMPs in control.
Well, the short answer that I'm sure Taylor will echo is feedback is quite powerful against the EMP and more specifically the ghost itself. That's the no-brainer one that everyone kind of knows about. But the long-winded answer is the best way to handle ghosts is for information. If you see them coming, if you see how many are in their army, then you know to do things like initiate Guardian Shield before you engage, spread your units out if you have the multitask or luxury of time to do that. But then other things, too, would be like walk your Stalkers forward off your army, try to pick one or two of them off if they're separating from their army. There's not a whole lot more you can do just because it's not like you can ask the Terran politely just not to use them or the Protoss units, like they coagulate pretty quick anyways, so unless you have 1,700 APM, you're not going to be able to separate your units to avoid all the EMPs. So you just have to do the best you can and then focus on feedback and information so that you can do the little things you can to mitigate how much damage they do.
Pain News, before you answer, Jeff, do you feel like in sort of the state of the game now that it is very like you're fearing EMPs more than you were even 7 months ago?
You know, I've always thought the EMP is a pretty big necessity. If you take the EMP out of Terran, I don't think they'd ever win another match against Protoss. If you even were to, like, make it less effective. I think it would hurt the matchup more for Terran than it would do anything else. So I think it's a necessary evil. And what I like about it is it does force Micro out of the Protoss. So do I fear it more now? No.
I guess I mean more in a we're just seeing it a lot more. Like where EMP might have been the luxury of a great player early on because they had the actions to be able to spare for that. And now generally the population getting much better, catching on to the, you know, what's going on. And, you know, you just see an EMP's like it just seems like a natural part of every single TVP where I don't know if that was always the case.
Yeah. No, you're getting at it. I mean, it's just becoming the community as a whole is becoming more refined. It used to be like a special unit that only a few people had the attention span really to commit the actions towards. Now it's becoming recognized as a, well, you need that at a certain point in the game. And if you're not good with it, that's fine. You're not good with it, but you're still going to do it. So I do see it more, but not like so much more that it's, you know, like when you start driving a Beetle, you see Beetles all over the road or something like that. It's not like that. It's more like they're just a little bit more common because Terrans are becoming smarter, I think.
All right. Payne, is there any thoughts, or did In Control pretty much
that one out? He pretty much handled it. But just to add like a little bit to that, I think in Terrans getting smarter, I think like one of the main points about that that wasn't really touched on is that they're adding a lot more ghosts now. And that's really like what's kind of changing things a little bit. Like, for a really long time, players were using, you know, 1, 2, 3 ghosts at the most. But now we're seeing, you know, players realize how good they really are. And it's also kind of a way to counteract feedback by just having a ton of excess ghosts. I mean, you just have that many more opportunities for EMPs and they have to feedback that many more ghosts. So players are using a lot more ghosts. And they're also the thing that I'm afraid of the most is a Protoss player who's really diligent and good about spreading his High Templar and then feedback, you know, sending 1 or 2 High Templar ahead of the pack and just catching a few stray ghosts and killing them. So people who are really good at the, it becomes like a little ebb and flow before the battle where you're just going at it with your caster units. And there's certain players who have a lot of practice in that situation and they're really, really right. good at it. So those are the kind of players that I fear is guys who are like really, really good at that little pre-game or pre-fight dance.
And I imagine that those mechanics are only going to get better as the game progresses and people figure out more, you know, unique and smart ways to use those. So, okay, great. Let's do our last question. And then I just figured it out in my head. I figured out, so In Control is just going to like kind of wait until, okay, the call portion should be starting here in just a moment. I'm going to come on then and what? No.
It's all planned out, man.
This is our last question then, and then we'll go on to our help desk here. Anton asked this, and I love this question. I have been watching a lot of the NASL and other tournaments and noticed that each player will leave the game at different situations. Some players arguably will leave prematurely when there is still an opportunity to win, while others will not. So my question is to everyone, what threshold do you set to decide when you will quit? And Idra, you've been quiet. You probably have the most dynamic threshold of them all. So
it's not really dynamic. It's just always early. So,
but is it always really early, or is it just always maybe a little bit early? That's, you know. Anyway, but tell no. In all seriousness, like, what is the threshold for you?
When I feel that I have lost the game, and the only real comment I have on it is I don't usually count on my opponents to make mistakes, which is kind of funny given how little respect I have for most of my opponents. But yeah, I usually assume that they're going to play it out properly, and given that, I know if they're not going to make a bunch of significant mistakes, I would not win this. And so that is something I should work on, just like knowing that my opponents kind of suck and they'll likely give me the game if I stay in it a while longer.
It's an interesting problem to have, I guess. You know, all right. Well, let's. Who else? Jeff.
Such a politician. We.
What? I mean, what can I say? It's like, you know,
an interesting problem to have, I guess.
Well, you're like, I disrespect my opponent, but while I'm in game, I'm not gonna assume that they're gonna make mistakes, which is probably the smart thing to do. But
I just don't keep it in mind enough.
I don't know. Maybe that means
I'm just
you need more
for the big
mid-match
brother or Father Wheat. Father Wheat. Big Wheat.
Oh, it is an interesting problem to have. All right, Mr. In Control, what's your threshold?
Sometimes I'm the Lionheart type where I'll stay in there till there's like absolutely no physical way to win. And that's because throughout my history I've had the extreme weird situation where there's been a time where I'm completely dead, but the guy loses anyways. And then there's other times where it's like, especially as Protoss in StarCraft 2, you can have your back broken pretty good. Like, there's just situations where despite, like your economy starts slowing down and you're not going to be able to produce enough stuff and they're pushing forward. And yeah, you could hang out a little bit longer, but you could pull your probes, but the game's over. So I just leave at that point in time. There's very few people that have any issue with my exit time. I don't think I've ever lost too late or too little or too soon, rather.
Pain user, what about you?
When the flickering, dimming light of a comeback extinguishes, I leave. I hold on as long as possible when, you know, there's the chance I could come back. I've seen crazier things happen, and then eventually you just have to call it a day.
All right, so...
As long as he can drop a mule is what he's saying.
Jesus.
I was like, holy shit. Yes, I'm still in this shit.
Him and show.
Yeah. So actually then I'll put you guys on the spot. Who has the worst threshold for deciding when to quit?
Idra Barnum.
In which direction?
I think in the why are you still in... Well,
I find shit like Boxer and show far worse than me because that's just incredibly obnoxious.
How long that they will stay in the game.
Yeah. They stay well past there's any chance that they're going to have any comeback.
All right. They got heart.
That's not heart. That's just annoying.
I'm just kidding, dude.
How about you, Pain User? Who's got the worst threshold?
I already told you.
Who?
Greg.
Oh, but you're talking about from the earlier way, right? You've never been like, why is Greg still in this match?
Oh.
God, there's no way he's going to win it. What is he thinking? He's like, shit. Ooh, they're like 10 minutes into game two by that point.
Tyler, for sure. Yeah, he'll like get up and like go pee.
That doesn't count. That's just
food.
Being a dick.
He goes crazy. Cool. He loses.
Yeah, he's not a happy camper when he's losing games. So
sometimes
Tyler,
you feel
sure.
like all the actions stop, and you know he's just got his hands by his side, and he's looking.
Exactly.
Then he'll
nothing's
type out.
Goes up and does some pull-ups.
He'd be like, "Excuse me." I don't understand why the force field was to the right or left. It's like I played a PvP against him, and he started yelling at me that there was a doodad on the map on Delta Quadrant that looked like it would block, so his force field was connected to it. But then a zealot got by it or something like that, or his immortal got stuck. I was like,
not happy.
Sorry, man.
So what do you think, Jeff? Who's got the worst threshold?
I don't experience a lot of this, and I don't really recognize when it happens, so my test pool is pretty small. But I'll have to say, classically, Artosis, which is quite funny. But back in the media days when we played Brood War, there was a lot of games where he would just sit on two and a half bases when you've got like nine, and he's got just tanks and missile turrets everywhere, and it's just like, I don't care anymore. It's just a practice game. Get out. And he'll be like, "Nah, dude, you come. Don't worry. I'm pushing out to my third here in just like 5 minutes." He was pretty bad.
G5 is like that too in those games.
Yeah,
G5 would not leave.
Never leave.
In G5's defense, he had like 1,300 in the bank though, so he's waiting to spend it.
He's gonna have that next army come out off one base.
Yep.
I don't know that I could pinpoint an exact guy, but I got to say, recently, I've seen a couple games from Mondragon, and I think I mentioned this last night, Idra, when we were watching some games, but dude, there was seriously, like, I don't think I've ever casted a game before where I was like, dude, bro, I mean, really, like, what is going on?
It makes it hard on the commentator when it's, like, completely over. And
there's absolutely
like,
nothing to say. That's the worst.
And here's the final battle.
And then he GG's like the moment that Roach is like spits his first little acid. It's like GG. It's like real. I mean, it's like your mom telling you you're going to get the best Christmas present ever, 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 ever. And then nothing at the end. But actually, there was no excitement leading up to the GG, so that would be totally wrong. You could send in your questions to itg@onemoregame.tv, and looks like I already got a few people saying that, yeah, they'll help us with some of these questions. So that'd be great. We're getting a lot of awesome questions from you guys, so thank you. And with that being said, we're going to go on to our next segment, and probably everyone's favorite. It is the Help Desk. And we'll be opening up the phone lines. Please respect us, and we will respect you. But we'll try. I will.
Well said.
Paid user and Indra will. So we're going to no, we're gonna jump right into things. You can Skype us at DG Weed or telephone 909-581-8519. And let's take our first caller. We got error code 760. Welcome to Inside the Game. Word.
Maybe next time.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. I'm just wondering what you guys would like to see on, like, in the patch 1.4, not really balance-wise, but more feature-wise.
Feature-wise, like, from
replays with friends.
Low latency
channels. Yeah.
LAN.
Yeah,
cross server play.
The ability to ban cross server games play. You make.
Yeah, if you guys just saw the preview,
yeah. I saw the preview. Yeah,
yeah. They said that they weren't going to put in LAN.
Yeah,
of course not.
They're going to wait until it's going to be Heart of the Swarm, or Heart of the Swarm, and then what's the Legacy of the Void, and then there's going to be the LAN version after that. That's my prediction.
So 10 years from now.
10 years.
As soon as StarCraft 3 comes
count
out.
Count on it. Exactly 10 years. May 31st.
Just wait till everything goes haywire at BlizzCon again, because it did last year, and it probably will again this year. And then they'll be like, you know,
I can think of like one tournament that didn't have connection problems.
Right. Yeah. Even their own tournament, BlizzCon, disgusting. Had, like, tons of connection issues.
Well, and
like when you ruin your own venue because you don't have LAN, like that's just flat out arrogant.
It's funny because if you guys remember the early BlizzCons, Idra, you were at the one where they let you play one of the campaigns or 2v2.
Yeah,
you remember that?
Yeah,
that was all LAN.
Yeah, they have LAN. They just don't put it in the game.
Yeah, so maybe. 10 years. I just put it on my calendar right here in Google Calendar.
But on a serious note, D&D, replays with friends.
Oh my god, D&D.
Banning people from games. Like, why can anybody join your game and you just, like, remove them from the lobby and then they just rejoin? Why is that? What?
Yeah, well, I don't understand that either.
What argument could you possibly have? Well, I don't want anyone to be excluded from any game ever.
The funny thing is like, who's the idiot at Blizzard who was like, you know, we had these things in Brood War, but I think we should remove them. Yeah, that guy.
I want them gone. I tried to join Control's game the other day, moved me from the lobby, came back.
Won't be having it.
So
just won't. Won't. I would love it that it's like, GG Week goes busy a lot, just like I'm sure you guys do. Maybe we should leave his status on busy when he logs back in. So it's not like, okay, guys, what's up? We're casting another game, and some guy's like, what's up, pillow butt? You know, why don't I join you in these chat rooms over here, man? It's just, I can't. Oh.
All of the invitation stuff.
Yeah.
I think cross-server play is at the top for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that they implemented WoW cross-server play, dude.
Like, well, and is it playable latency?
From what I understand, there, I think it's limited to raids, but you could be like, yo, we're going to do this raid together, get your 40 dudes, 20 from one side, 20 from the other, and then you're, like, battling it out on neutral ground. I don't know, but when I read the article, I had some hope. I mean, it doesn't seem completely, even if it wasn't a ranked perspective, right?
Yeah. Well, I've heard it's technically feasible. Like, there's no actual reason for us to have latency playing on Korea. As long as the country has decent internet infrastructure, it's completely possible to play in low latency with them from here. It's just Blizzard building it in. So,
You guys ready for another call? We've got Andrew on the line. Andrew, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Hello, Andrew. Goodbye, Andrew. We'll take Ronnie. Ronnie, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, I'm calling from the Netherlands. So I got a question about the GG. I think it doesn't mean good game anymore. It's just being said every game. And I got a question about it. What do you guys think about it? Does it have to be said still every game, or?
Who should we go first?
I don't know. Maybe the guy in the middle.
I don't care about it at all. I do it when I feel it causes too much shit to be worth it. But no, I think it's meaningless, and it's an annoying little tradition that should go away.
I don't think it's necessarily meaningless. I think you should use it if it's a good game. Like if you legitimately respect the other player.
It's become meaningless because if you're required to say it, then it doesn't have any meaning. Because like you say it after a six bull, obviously.
So by that measure, if Idris says GG to you, then you should be like, wow, you know, it must have been a good game if Idris was GG, right? Is that what you're saying, Greg? I mean, that you given
in
GGs?
Theory, yeah, but that's also assuming that I'm not angry enough to just ignore it.
Gotcha. So. F10N, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Because from my own point of view, I never say it because I don't think the other player deserves it. Because most of the time it's just some stupid tactic anyone uses. So I just don't think they deserve a good game because that's what it means to me, good game.
So are you saying you never give GGs or that you're very selective about them?
I'm really selective about it. When I truly feel I've been outplayed by some really good tactic and it's been maybe a really long game, I say GG, but not with somebody rushing me with, a rushing tactic, with cheesing or anything.
Okay.
For me, there's a couple things at play. I come from a pretty athletic background. Like, I played a lot of sports, and at the beginning and end of most of our games, you would shake hands with your opponent or... you know, you'd say good game, actually. You'd verbally say it. And it's not that everyone necessarily believed that they needed to go express to some random other guy on another team that, hey, I felt that was a really good game, and I just thought you should know that. It's like, that's not what's actually at play. It's more of like a competitive respect. Like, two people entered a competition, one, regardless of who it is, they both say, hey, good game, you know, and I'll see you another time. And it's more of just like a... It's kind of the same reason why someone at a dinner table says, could you please pass the salt? They don't actually feel like they need to bow down to that person for the salt, but it sounds completely different when they go, pass me the salt. You know,
bitch.
Like, yeah, like there needs to be a please in there because that's just the normative thing to do, that it's just kind of mutually understood that that is the proper way to go about it. So in StarCraft 2, when a game ends, I don't feel it necessary to go, hey, and like shake them by the shoulder and be like, good game. I thought that was a good game. But I do want to say, like, as a representative of the game and just in a competition, GG. The other thing that's at play, too, is whether you like it or not, a person that says GG gets zero slack. It's not – that's the normal thing to do. When you don't say GG, it gets focused on as, like, why are you such a jerk? Would you do that? What do you mean? Do you not think – like, why are you being so mean about it? So when Greg says he does it because he does do it if he thinks he'll get too much shit for it, that's playing up to a certain thing, I think, too, where it's like, why distinguish yourself the opposite? If it's just something that everyone does to be kind of nice, I don't feel it worth my time or effort to take a stand on such something like that. Like, I don't say GG because I genuinely think it's not a good game if I lose the game. And I just rather, like, participate in something that doesn't really mean anything but is better than not doing it.
Yeah, but it I think it really lost its meaning. I mean, for me, it
who
still
cares
means
what
a good game.
Fucking meaning is. That's my point, man. Like, there's no society of people that are like the representatives of GG where they're marching around the world. Like,
yeah, I just think it lost its meaning a little bit. I don't say it when I go online, but I just want to go to the next game when I lose, and oftentimes I just forget about it. I just go do the next game because I want to play.
All right, Ronnie, thank you very much for your call, and I'm going to GG. No, I'm not going to GG you on that one, so we'll take our next one. Let's take area code 281. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys? I know you guys play like 8 to 10 hours a day. I'm just wondering, like, when you get your exercise in and stuff, if you do.
I don't know that anyone here practices 8 to 10 hours a day, but let's find out. Pain user, 8 to 10 hours a day.
Well, I work that much.
Okay. But, okay. That's kind of like.
I mean, I usually work out like 3 to 4 times a week when I get back from work, and once on the weekend. I usually do one day on, one day off, like alternating lifting and cardio. So I run and I lift and I switch between like core muscle groups.
That's why you're so strong, dude. I never knew that.
Yeah, dude. See, yeah. Regular in control right here.
I mean, well, Adrian, Jeff, you're both, you both hit the gym, right?
Yeah, I practice around 3 or 4 hours a day right now, I'd say. And me and Machine go to the gym 3 to 4 days a week and run on off days.
All right, thanks, caller. That was intriguing.
Okay, come on. Come on.
Ignore the power lifter on this question.
Yeah. I compete in powerlifting. So, I mean, the spirit of your question is, when you have so much time towards the game, how do you work in exercise? And I don't know if Greg and Taylor are the same way, but I like to go to the gym at like 9 or 10 at night. When the day's kind of done. I'm not a morning guy. I think they run in the morning. I could never do that.
No, we run at night.
Oh, you run at night. Okay, good. That's just dangerous.
they run in bright orange, Jeff. God.
Try running in the Arizona sun. It does not work.
That's
with,
true.
With all the reflective stripes on them and stuff, they look super badass, dude.
It's really important, though, to the spirit, to your question, though. Like, when I'm not casting, when I'm not doing all these projects, I do play like 8 to 10 hours a day. I actually, I don't think I, unless you're in the Korean environment, you don't sit and train for 12 hours, but you do come to the computer, play, read about stuff, watch stuff for roughly 8 to 10 hours a day when I'm not casting in ASL or something like that. So I like to work out at night. It's really important. I work out just about every day, of course, different muscle groups. And then I don't do cardio because it's for lady men. Cardio is for stupid heads, so I don't do that stuff.
All righty. Thanks, caller. We're going to take our next one. We've got Chris on the line. Chris, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Chris, don't fail me, man. Chris, don't fail me. I hear you.
Hello?
Hello. Chris, welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Now that you're
This question is actually directed towards pain user. Do you still play competitively? Are you still practicing StarCraft? Because I really admired your style back in, I think it was MLG, where you used a lot of Thor Banshee. I think you kind of, I like that style a lot. I was wondering if you still play competitively.
Thanks a lot. First of all, I really appreciate it. And as of late, not really. Like NASL, I'm unable to reschedule a lot of my matches to when I'm not working. So obviously I can't play those, and then balancing 40-hour work week with playing competitively is just impossible. So it's at the point now where like all the work I'm doing with IGN and IPL and stuff, which is awesome, by the way, I'm totally enjoying it. You have to make a discerning choice, and there's no way I can continue to compete at the level I was competing at. So, I'm going to be stepping off from that for a while. And I'm going to still be attending tournaments like MLG and any other big, you know, North American tournaments that pop up just to stay fresh and know what all the players are up to and keep up with the metagame and all the strategies and stuff, because as an analyst, that's going to be really important for me. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and actually, Chris, Taylor does go into it actually even more in-depth at the beginning of this episode. So make sure to watch the VODs on InsideTheGame.blip.tv.
All right, well, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah.
See what I did there? See what I did there?
Sink it.
It's commercial. Yeah. It.
What's up? All right, no, let's take the next caller. We got area code 778 on the line. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hi, guys. My name is Tachyon. I'm a Master Zerg, and I have a question for Idra and In Control.
Okay. Like Tachyon, like a Tachyon beam that I used in Wing Commander?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Hold on. In Control laughed at me, all right? Wing Commander
dude,
2
Wing Commander
is
with
like,
Mark Hamill narrating.
But no, that was Wing Commander 3. But Wing Commander 2 was scraping. Hey, whoa, dude, get your well. And it was okay. Fair enough. Wing Commander 4 as well. Just watch yourself, okay? Watch. Okay, caller. Sorry. Didn't mean to disrespect.
All right. Last week on State of the Game, four very talented Protoss, the names of Naniwa, Tyler, Huck, and of course In Control, talked about investors, and they all agreed that they were really powerful in CVP. And this kind of made me question my CVP style because I barely ever use them. And I tend to favor using the Roach Hydra Corruptor with the drops and multi-pronged attacks and stuff, and I only get about 3 to 4 infestors at most when I'm nearing max supply. So I was wondering if you guys could clarify like the strengths and weaknesses of infestor builds versus Roach Hydra Corruptor, and what do you think is the strongest infestor build out there right now in CVP?
I don't particularly like infestor builds where you rush for them early on. I don't think they actually do enough to hold off timing attacks. And if you actually commit to going to them, then Protoss just sits back and takes their third because they can't be used aggressively at that point. The strength of infestors is if you're playing a Protoss who doesn't make blink or use feedback. Otherwise, they're not nearly as good as people say they are.
All right. Anyone else want to comment on that?
I agree with Greg full-heartedly. I think infestors are bad, and unless they go blink or feature Templar that go feedback, I don't think you should make them.
Oh, I mean,
I really think people should stop making infestors. I would really like that.
It would be great.
Yeah, they get rid of all your shields really well, and then our army disappears.
All right, thanks, caller. Thanks, 778 there.
Well, I'll give a serious answer, Wheat.
Yes, go ahead.
I'll contribute. What was he really asking about? Just like, how do I use infestors?
Just strengths and weaknesses of infestors and just general infestor stuff.
What is the strongest infestor build, he said. Jeff, would you like to instill your knowledge? That was the last words out of his mouth. What is the strongest infestor build right now?
Infestor build. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Greg kind of led off with saying that there's not. I don't really like leading off with the infestor. I would have to agree with that. It's not even necessarily that it's not good against the timing. It just kind of, it's not good against anything. It doesn't really give you a timing in yourself. And it puts you, it more puts you at mercy to the Protoss. Like, if they control the battle very well, then you lose every time. Like, it doesn't matter how you control it. So I don't like to play to the style where it's like, I hope they make mistakes because then I'll win. It's better to play. That's hilarious. It's better to play a style where you have the ability to win regardless of how they play, or at least put yourself in a position to capitalize on that. So I feel like leading off the infestor gets away from that. And then I would just say the best functionality of the infestor for me is mid to late game management. Like, the infestor is a unit for the Zerg where if they don't do something, they're dead. So it's a nice thing that kind of puts them in a predictable place as opposed to the other compositions where they have multiple answers and they don't have to be doing one thing or another.
Sure.
Whereas with the infestor, if they don't have blink, they're dead. And they should go Templar. They don't have to. They should go Templar. But basically, they have to respect the infestor. They can't be running around with blink stalkers being annoying as much. They have to be much more predictable, I feel. And I think that's a strong suit of the infestor.
All right, we're going to take our next caller. It is Adam. Adam, welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hey, DJ Wheat. I just want to more of like a comment more than anything, actually. I'm actually an Arizona StarCraft player. I've actually met up with Idra. You might be able to put a face to me. I actually gave you that gift card, the Outback Steakhouse gift card.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I just give a shout-out to everybody in Arizona. We have a huge community here, and it's going to be big. It's going to be great. Also, if you can give a shout out to Machine and just say, hey, great job yesterday at the tournament over at the Arizona Open. We do local tournaments like once a month now, and it's awesome. And I'm actually just shaking here, getting so excited talking to you guys live. And I just thought I'd say hello, and please keep up what you guys are doing for the community. It's excellent, and I hope to hear from you guys more often. Every single day, I love to hear about new tournaments, new things going on with the community. So, yeah, please keep it up.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate
it.
And I'm totally lying because he didn't give me an Outback gift certificate or In Control or Pain User.
And I love all you guys so share, much. I so sent everyone on the show an Outback Steakhouse gift certificate.
No, I'm just kidding, man. It's good to hear people throwing those competitions. It's great to hear that Machine's going out and, you know, supporting the local scenes. Everyone always asks, like, how do we make a scene? It's like, dude, just make one, you know, invite 10 people to your fucking basement and have a little LAN party. Like, everything grows from shit like that. That's where a lot of us all came from anyway. So thank you for your call nonetheless, Adam. Next caller, it is the unknown phone number. Welcome to Inside Game, your unknown.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm a high-level platinum Zerg player, and I guess my question's for Idra. I've been having some trouble lately with ZVP, and it just seems like if I let Protoss get over three bases and I want to play like a macro game, they're just going to end up winning in the end with the death ball. Is there like a limit to Protoss, like where if they get too many bases, I'm just going to lose the game and I should just go kill them beforehand? I guess that's my question.
If they secure three bases and you don't have a big advantage, you're in trouble. And if they get four bases, you're pretty much dead. Blinkstalker with Colossus and Templar support is just really fucking good against everything. So, yeah, you really have to put pressure on them in that.
Watch your language, young man. Watch your language.
No, I got Destiny backing me up. I'm good.
Okay. Oh, it didn't mean anything? Oh, never mind then. It's fine.
No, the mid-game is where Zerg really has any chance at all versus Protoss. You kind of get this boom of units. As soon as you see them expand, unless they're doing an expand into an all-in, then you can power a bunch of drones, and then you get a big boom of units before their tech really kicks in, and you absolutely have to make something happen at that point. If you let them get to three bases... If you let them get to three bases unmolested there, you're pretty much dead. So, yeah, you have to make something happen in the mid-game.
Okay, cool, man. I appreciate your help, and I enjoyed watching your stream last night. Fucked, you lost the minigun, but up, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Take care. Let's take another one here. Let's take Jacob. Jacob, welcome to Inside the Game. Jacob. All right.
Hello?
Hello, Jacob.
Hello?
Hello, Jacob.
Hey. Hey, I have a question for all of you. Why do you think that the Koreans are so dominant in the RTS scene and not in the other scenes? Because I know that Korea has like one good Counter-Strike team, and a lot of them practice 12 hours a day, but they're still not a top team. They never win anything. But in StarCraft 2, and especially StarCraft Brood War, they're so extremely dominant. Why is that?
There's a few Korean Counter-Strike teams, right?
There's a couple.
Pai and
We Made Fox.
We Made Fox.
Yeah. There was a Power K Korean Quake 3 player back in, I want to say 2003, and he kind of raped some faces.
To quickly answer your question,
he owns some
bitches. I would say the level of competition and the amount of money involved in the esport Brood War. And RTSs in Korea are just like way more prestigious than all the other genres, and they have so many more fans. And Blizzard games are also huge in Korea. So
yeah, culture has
a way
lot
bigger
to do
fan
with
base.
It,
way more money is involved. There's major cable, you know, television channels involved. So that fosters more competition.
And their water.
The kimchi.
Kimchi.
Actually, on that subject though, I heard. Okay, my limousine driver in New York, and I'm going to say that every time it comes relevant, because obviously that's fucking awesome, but I asked him, I said, why is New York pizza so damn good? It's the water, he said.
See?
It's the water.
It's the water. It's no lie. Why are StarCraft 2, or why are StarCraft players from Korea so dominant? It's the water, bro.
Okay. Greg, you hate.
Yep.
Greg,
you All right, thanks, Jacob. Thank you very much.
I think it's also the experience and time that they have put into like establishing practice houses and big tournaments and stuff. Like they're just so much farther along than we are. They have so many more years of
experience. It's culture, right? It's probably maybe I'm going to absolutely make myself look like an ass here, but is skateboarding, like, aren't the best skateboarders from, you know, North America?
I think so.
And is that just because it just became such a cultural phenomenon and, like, you know, like it got embedded into, you know, in the same way that StarCraft sort of got embedded into Korean culture? Right now, some kid is like, oh, my God, there's this Swedish skateboarder that's way better than anyone that's from the in. It may be true. But, you know, I kind of feel like that would be a case that would be similar. I don't know. I'm probably totally wrong.
Like, the vast majority of the teenagers who are obsessed with gaming in Korea, it's just obviously they're going to go to the league that's on TV, or the game that's on TV, and has these huge teams dedicated to it. It's just, that's the go-to option. And they also have all the infrastructure already set up, so it helps pick out the talented players and really grow them efficiently. That's the biggest deal.
Take our next call. We got area code 210 on the line. Welcome to Inside the Game. That's your cue. Yes, hello.
Hey, my name's Eric. I got a question for iDrip.
Fire.
I'm a high level diamond player. And my question is, I understand like the mutant buff was pretty damn good. The Roach buff was pretty good, but Mutalisk and Zerglin used to be like the main choice for fighting Protoss. And as a Protoss player myself, the Death Ball seems to basically run over everything, you know, with Colossus, Stalkers, and Sentries. Why is it that Mutalisks are never used against Protoss anymore?
Timing rushes. These, like, fast expansion into 5 or 6 gate with possibly a plus 1 weapon or Blink Stalker, and you just make a bunch of Stalker Sentries, and you go pressure them. If they happen to be going Mutas, you can kill them unless they made, like, 6 Spine Crawlers, in which case they already gave up map control, and they're incredibly defensive. They invested a lot in that. And the whole point of Mutas is to gain map control. So, really, you can do this pretty solid, standard, safe build, and if they happen to be going Muta, then you just kill them right out. So, it's just incredibly vulnerable to that, and if you go Muta, you're hoping they don't pressure you at that time of the game.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take, I think this guy, all right. We got Joey on the line. Joey, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey. Can you hear me this time?
Hear you great.
That's
can you
the story about last week. I called in, made an ass myself, and that sucked.
Yeah, but, yeah. I told you I'd pick up your call, though, if you called back, right?
Yeah.
See, I always
that's
follow.
You are. You're DJ Weed.
I always follow.
The Lannister always pays his debts.
Anyway, so I was kind of curious about when we compare the Korean Brood War scene the way it is now, things are a lot more strict and organized, obviously, with Kespa and the infrastructure and stuff, right? I was kind of curious, do you guys as players feel that that would be more beneficial? Like, if things were a lot more strict and, like, kind of the same way they are in Korea with Kessa here in the foreign scene, could that benefit or, like, help the growth of the scene? Or would it just be hindering the development of all these, like, different grassroots kind of leagues that are going on?
Depends on what standpoint. The ridiculously strict practice regimes and all that the Kespa teams use, the players would all be better. But Kespa is like a monopoly, and right now we have a bunch of different leagues competing, and they're turning out a lot of really good products as they try and win over the viewers. So, no, I think it's growing better as is like this. And Kespa is also a really kind of dirty, bad organization that was terrible to the players. So it's much better this.
It's also not a realistic model outside Eastern culture. You're not going to grab 12 American pro gamers and say, all right, it is 9 a.m. I'll see you guys at 9 p.m. when the training session's over.
And you're allowed out of this room. Yeah.
They won't. And when people are unhappy, when they're playing a game, they play worse, for the most part.
Too
is cultural. I think Eastern players can play very well unhappy. Still not as good as I think they do when they're happy, but you get my point. The game is growing, and to your point, I think it will get to a point where, hopefully, I mean, we all should hope this, that pro gamer houses become a necessity to compete at the highest of the high levels, because there's so many tournaments with such big payouts and so many people care that it makes sense for an organization to invest that money into a organization or a house like that. And that would be great. It would never be like it was in Korea, but it would be cool if it went somewhere there.
I just want to throw something in here and then get your guys' thoughts. Joey, by the way, thanks for your call. I guess there's not – what you say, Jeff, is so true. But there's also a part of me that's like – I do feel like some sort of association needs to exist. And what I, you know, I go to sleep at night, I'm like, oh man, it would be so great if everyone actually played on the same fucking version of Metalopolis that, yeah. you know, and I wish that we yeah. had a something in place that could help control that a little bit better, because it well, is seriously out of control.
Let me tell you how that becomes more in control.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. You're going to have to, like, in the old days for Brood War for non-Koreans, it was a tournament raised up, that was so important to everyone that the other, the more outlying events kind of went in that direction. So for iCup, when WCG was going on, map of the week was WCG maps. They would absolutely allow you to practice that. Now, of course, that's a ladder to tournament ratio, but I would say we're already kind of seeing that with, like, MLG. It's really important for us North American and European players. So other tournaments are starting to use the same kind of – like, MLG was the first one to take out close positions, to take out ramp blocking, and now other tournaments are doing that. And I feel like it's going to take a tournament raising itself up so high and being so important to everyone that people start going in that direction. Will there be a KESPA for the non-Korean world? No, I don't think so. Never. Unless the game absolutely explodes and there's like a $20 billion industry or something like that. It's going to get to a place where everyone cares about that one tournament and it kind of evens out from there.
It would be nice to see the tournament organizations take a look at one another and at least come to some kind of a consensus, though. I think a lot of it also has to do with stamping their name brand and logos on the maps and making sure that they get that taken care of. And if they could see past that, because honestly, like, the amount of promotional value that they get out of having their own custom maps that they slightly edit or whatever for their individual tournaments, and pretty much every tournament has done this. And a lot of times they'll just make super arbitrary changes to the maps without consulting good players, and they won't test them either. So I think that really needs to stop.
Yeah, that in itself would be okay, but really there's no need to actually make game-changing changes.
Yeah.
Just some cooperation between the teams, between the leagues would be definitely nice.
Joey, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Hold on. Really quickly.
Okay.
In control, can you just give me one favor? I want to see the troll phase. You haven't made it in forever, and you're leaving state of the game, and I want to see it one time before you go.
Wait, you didn't even say please, man.
What's the troll phase?
When you get your face in the camera and your eyes go right wide.
Oh.
I love that.
I might bring that up tonight, my friend. Stay tuned.
You better. Thank you.
I love how that description actually, like, reminded you of what he meant. I didn't get that at all.
Oh, I was just being polite. You only ask once. If you still don't really talk about it, you just move on. Greg, I'll teach you how to work the internet, buddy. Don't worry.
All right. We're going to take the next caller. We got John David on the line. What's up, John David? Welcome to Inside the Game.
John
you'd
David
think a guy with two first names would have, like, an advantage using the program like Skype. I mean,
that's
maybe.
That's name too.
I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and keep John David on and answer the next caller in the conference just to see if maybe I'll get to hear from John David. We'll see. All right.
It's a recipe for disaster.
It is, but I like to live on the edge, pain user. So now we've got John David, Richard, and VJ on the line. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. VJ. All right. Very cool. So I'm just going to add the next
this is
guy
terrible.
Then. And we'll just hang up on those guys. Thanks for playing. There we go. Chris, welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
What's up, man?
All right. I guess this question's for all of you. I was just wondering, what do you think about the Warcraft 3 versus Brood War argument?
What?
What about it? I don't know that there is much of an argument, to be honest.
I don't know.
What's the argument?
I hear a lot of people saying that Warcraft 3 players are better because of the TSL.
Well, my dad can beat up all their dads, so.
That's
look at
like
Korea.
Solved.
How many Korean Warcraft 3 players have been having any success at all in GSL?
Moon. Not really many at all. I guess Moon.
Moon,
a
no,
bit.
Hasn't Moon is famous for
yeah,
the most
Lin
worst Baneling ball ever.
Yeah.
Or Baneling Burrow.
I think in our scene, it comes down to the fact that they just put in a lot of time and effort, and several of them happen to be top players. And right now, they're currently winning things. But I don't know if there's like enough data to consider that trend setting. You know, we have to wait for quite a while and let several big tournaments play out, and then you can start assessing data and making assumptions like that. But right now, it's like it's totally up in the air.
Well, so there's a couple things to it, though.
You guys don't notice anything different when you're going against a Warcraft 3 player?
They play differently.
Yeah, they definitely play differently. I wouldn't say it's like better or worse. It's just it's like a different style of play.
Jeff, what were you going to interject there?
A couple things. One, I think there was a lot of really strong Warcraft 3 players in Europe. So when they transferred over to Starcraft 2, they already had like the professional mindset. They were able to go to work. They knew to train. They knew to take it serious. B, StarCraft 2 is less macro-intensive than Brood War was. It's less mechanically difficult to macro than Brood War was. So for a Warcraft 3 player to transition to a game like StarCraft 2 that is a lot more it's a lot more welcoming to people that don't have to play the mechanics of the game as much, the transition is smoother. So actually, Warcraft 3 players were doing a lot better earlier in the game, and as it's going on, they're starting to phase out a little bit, some of them. Obviously, there's still the top-tier Warcraft 3 players that are doing fantastic in StarCraft 2, but for the most part, the density of Warcraft 3 players represented in a lot of the tournaments are starting to thin out, and, you know, not to name names, but like I said, they're still the top-tier, but not as many, so I think the longer the game goes and the more mechanically difficult it becomes, we'll see less and less unless they scale up with us.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Good luck at MLG.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for knowing how to use Skype, buddy. You're the man. All right. We're going to take a phone call because those never fail. Area code 281, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, I'm a high-level bronze player. No, I'm just kidding. But,
No, really. It's okay.
Yeah, about army compositions. I'm a 1400 Master Zerg, and I feel that, like, for example, ZVP and ZVT, I'm always doing the same things, and I want to mix up my play, but I don't know what army compositions are good. For example, versus Protoss, I do Roach Drops, and it's kind of hit or miss. If they do a really good timing, I just die. I feel like I'm flipping coins, even though, like, oh, I crushed the Optic Zero, that cheesy NA Protoss, but, yeah.
Keep going, buddy.
I don't know what to do. I crushed Optic Zero.
Yes. there was some contradiction in what you said, but maybe that's, you know, says something about
that. Was
this
awesome.
Color, I mean, anything specifically? I don't know if Adra wants to try to tackle this one. I think
it's really general, I think. But let's just take ZVT in example. Like, a lot of people, like, shit.
There's three different things you can do ZVT. You can go Mutaling, Baneling. You can go Roachling, Baneling, then Festerling into Ultraling, Infester. Maybe Broodlordling, Infester.
Yeah, it seems pretty straightforward for me. I mean, ZVP, I see a lot of different styles, like Overlord Baneling drops, I see a ton. But even myself, like, I just do Roach Hydra drops, and I try to end the game.
I beat Combat EX.
Yeah.
Did he cannon rush you? Because if he didn't, that doesn't count.
No, I beat him.
Oh, that's funny.
No, but if he didn't cannon rush, you can do his best strategy. Soccer.
And then I made fun.
I beat Mini Wheat. All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I'm just going to randomly next time in my next game, I'm just going to randomly throw out, I beat Optic Zero just in the middle of the
funny
game.
How is that, though? Like, just, he's mid-sentence, hey. Like, pleading his case.
Thought you should,
like,
know
way,
it. Thought you should
destroyed
know
Optic
it.
Zero.
No, that's okay. Trust me, got callers. We want to hear about all your accomplishments, especially if they have anything to do with the three hosts. Especially. That's like a bonus.
Don't say that. I too much.
All right.
That's like twice tonight somebody's called in and just like thrown in the random shameless plug.
Area code 512. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, folks. How are you?
Doing good.
Okay, my question is for everybody here, since you're all kind of, included in this category of people, which would be casters. I'm curious, why is it that there seems to be so much blatant, untapped sexual energy in the casting in the StarCraft II community today?
Wait, you said untapped.
I'm kind of interested. Untapped. Are you looking to go on a date with me?
Does that mean you want more of it? You want us to tap it?
Yeah, you said untapped. Is
exactly.
That, oh, so you're feeling like we're not harnessing the sexual energy enough.
We should all
I
think
like where this guy's going. I think casters are the leading sexual desires of most people. I believe that to be true.
Basically the sex symbols of esports.
Easily. When Day 9 shows his hairy arms, forget about it.
Forget about it. Yep. Donnie Brasco style for real.
The shorter the sleeves on that kid,
Donnie Brasco.
The longer better, something man. Goes, man. That's for sure.
Well, okay. He left.